This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
How do you introduce John Spence? I could send you to johnspence.com, and I will, but I'll set it up this way. John is a reader and a researcher. He's had amazing real-life experiences, especially in high-level work positions. He's super passionate. He's totally game, and he's so well-read with so many good experiences that he's a blast to hang out with, and he's a great interview, as you're about to find out. Here we go, back into the arena with my good friend, John Spence. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Anthony. How are you?
It's good to see you again. I can see you, but nobody else can because we're doing audio. It's a podcast, but it is good to see you again.
It's good to see you too.
Last time we were with our wives and we went to some breakfast place. That was the first time we met face-to-face and had a great time. It was great to meet you and Sheila. We had a really good time.
I had a great time too. Your wife is beautiful. You're way out of your league.
You're not the first person to say that. I brought you on to the podcast to talk about, let's talk about books. And books are something I'm passionate about and you're passionate about. And let's talk about Awesomely Simple. Let's start there because that's sort of what you culled from reading like what, 11, 12 books over the course of a year or something like that?
I've been reading about 100 to 120 business books a year, every year since 1989, which is when I got my first CEO or my first real job. And I realized I didn't know enough to do my job. So I started studying and learning as much as I could. And it's a habit I've kept up now for 20 something years.
That's awesome. That's a lot of books.
Yeah.
Do you read a whole book or do you bail if the book isn't good?
Oh, that's a great question. People ask me this all the time. If I get 50 pages into a book and I don't underline anything, I give it away or give it or just get rid of it. Because if the author can't teach me something or make me think in the first 50 pages, I'm not going to give them another 200 to prove it.
Most books now, though, I mean, now that we have this Kindle platform that we can go to, if you want to write an 80-page book because that's really all the book should be, you can do that now. I mean, you don't have to have a 240-page book.
Actually, I prefer the 60, 70, 80-page books because, like you and I both know, when you publish a book, they ask you to make it 250, 280 pages, and sometimes you've only got 200 pages of good stuff, but you've got to find something else to put in there for the publisher. On the ebook platform, you just put in the very, very, very best stuff and no fluff, and I love reading books like that. Also, it's for me, it's not as big a financial risk to buy a $5 or $9 Kindle in a book, or, you know, at Amazon. And if it's not fantastic, I don't feel like I just threw $30 away.
Yeah, that's right. It's so easy now. Plus the ROI on a book, I try to tell, especially young people, I mean, there's no greater ROI than a book. And a Kindle book for $9.99 to get, you know, we'll talk about Awesomely Simple. This guy, John, reads 120 business books a year for 10 years. He puts this book out. You're getting way past the 10,000 hour rule. Let's say we're at about the 120,000 hours of studying and thinking about business, applying what you learned. And then you condense it into Awesomely Simple, which is what, 120 pages?
Yeah, about 128 pages.
Yeah, right in that neighborhood. And you cull it down to, I'll call it six conclusions. Let's just chat about those six conclusions. And this is a lifetime of reading and thinking about business. We'll get to your two new books too, but let's go back to the one where I first found you. Let's talk about the six principles. What did you discover and why did you condense it into Awesomely Simple like that?
Well, there's three major things that led into that book. Number one was all the research and study I'd been doing. Number two is I've been the owner or CEO of 10 companies, three of them multinational. And what I did is I took the real life experience and all that reading and I looked for the patterns. I built my entire career off finding patterns. So, you know, when I read tens and tens of thousands of pages on the same subject around leadership, business excellence, accountability, discipline, execution, those sort of things, I've noticed that there was a very clear pattern emerged. And that pattern boiled down to six key factors, not the only things it takes to run a great business, but at least six fundamental things that you've got to do. Well, let's put it this way. If you don't do them, there's very little chance you will have a sustainably successful business.
Let's run them down. Name the six.
I have to actually get my book and make sure I get them in the right order. I luckily have one sitting on the shelf behind me. I know that I start with vision.
Start with vision.
And then we move, I believe, it's vivid vision, best people, robust communications, sense of urgency, disciplined execution, and extreme customer focus. And actually, I took all of that and boiled it down even further to what I call my formula for business success. And that is T plus C plus ECF in parentheses times DE equals business success. Talent plus culture plus extreme customer focus multiplied by disciplined execution equals business success.
I saw the video on that.
Yeah.
There's a video out there with you walking through, because I saw the formula. I'm like, what is John talking about? I mean, there's this acronym in all these letters. It's a math equation, but it's perfect. I want to just deal with the last one, the multiplication. You spend a lot of time talking to leaders. I spend more time with sales organizations and some sales leaders, but you spend more time than I do with leaders. How do you talk to them about the one thing that I see that makes a difference out of that? They could get talent right and culture right, but it just seems to me that everybody's chasing the shiny object. This new idea comes out, everybody jumps on the bandwagon. We got to go do this right now. And they don't really need to chase the shiny object. If they would just buckle down and double the bet on the execution and just focus on really driving the one initiative that really matters, or the two or three initiatives, and just stay there, they're going to succeed more at a greater level than they are. How do you talk to them about that when I think, you know, and you and I as speakers are somewhat in a fashion business, you know, they want you to come and bring something new and something interesting, but sometimes we have to tell them the most interesting thing you can do is just execute on what you already should be doing.
Yeah, you've just now, I'm now in my 14th year teaching a class at the Wharton School of Business on strategy and strategic thinking. And every year I get about 100 to 120 senior executives in my class. And every year I ask them the same question: what percentage of companies that have a good plan, that know how to succeed in the marketplace, they've got a good, strong strategy, what percentage of them effectively execute on that strategy? And for 14 years, the answer has been 10 to 15%. There's, you know, you look at it and say, and one of the other things that's critical too, was a big epiphany in teaching that class, is I realized that one of the most important things that great strategic leaders do is figure out what to say no to. And that's the big focus of, you don't have to be, you know, if you try to be everything to everybody, you'll be nothing. We know that cliche. But if you can figure out the three or four key things that truly drive success in your business, and when you look at that, it, all strategy boils down to just one simple idea: value differentiation times execution. I've got to bring something that's unique, interesting, and valuable to my customer. Hopefully it's defendably differentiated. And then I got to execute on it well. If you can just do that, what do I do that my customers love, they love to pay for, they're happy to pay for, it's differentiated in a way that I can defend it and be unique, and then I go out and execute every day, that's where world-class companies are built. It's not the new shiny object. It's doing the fundamentals flawlessly day in and day out.
When you talk about the percentage, all I could think of was Dean Wormer in Animal House going through the grade point averages saying, you know, 0.0. Yeah, it's just execution's boring. It's tough. It's hard to get people to continue to march that direction. And it's sometimes, for me, I think the analogy is you look at somebody and they're doing the right things, but they're not getting the results fast enough. And it's like, you're in Florida, so you don't recognize this analogy, but maybe you've lived other places. You're in a car and you're sliding on the ice and you turn the wheel and it just hasn't caught yet, but you just have to keep going and have faith that it is going to turn at some point. But we go, oh, it's not working, it's not working, it's not working. But it is working. And I hear this, you were talking about my Einstein book, and everybody attributes this quote to Einstein. Insanity is the definition of doing the same thing and expecting a different result. But that's what execution is. You have to keep doing it and keep doing it, even when it looks like it's not working, because it just hasn't caught yet. And at some point, it catches and we succeed.
Yeah, and to me, you know, there's a couple things, and you hit on one there, is patience. I talk to a lot of senior executives that bring me in to help them through the change process. I was with on the phone this morning with a gentleman who's going to be a CEO of a new, or going to take over as CEO of a company. And he said, you know, I got to come in, make changes, make things happen, bring the, get the thing in a new direction. I said, you know, Brian, just remember this, 18 to 24 months minimum of focus before you can expect any real progress and any real change. He's like, what? I go, year and a half to 2 years minimum. And he's like, I had given myself 90 days. In 90 days, nothing will have happened.
In 90 days, you won't even know where you are yet.
You won't know the names of the people that work there. You would still be trying to find your office.
Exactly. That's too short of a time. You've done something. You've done a lot of interesting things, but let's talk about something interesting you've done lately. And you've got the two Kindle books. I thought we'd talk a little bit about those. So the first one, Letters to a CEO. And I just picked that up on Kindle. It's a super cool little book. And I want to ask you again, this is what you did, is you took real letters that you've written to clients and you publish them in a format that sort of, well, I had to talk to this guy about that, and I had to talk to this guy about that. I'm always using guys because if it's anything where it's negative and you have to nudge them back on track, it's the male. If it was something that you were congratulating them, we would go with female. But you took these letters. How did you do that? And tell me what the feedback has been from the people who know you and may have been the subject of any of those letters.
Well, yeah, what I did is, like you said, I look back over the last 8 or 9 years, and I do some executive coaching and a lot of things like that. And when someone asks me, you know, for my advice or my input on something, I don't usually just chat with them. I sit down and I take everything I know and I look at my books and I boil it down to a 3 or 4 or 5 page letter slash memo. And I say, read this, then we'll discuss it. So these are my most condensed ideas on things like strategy, consultative sales, what it's like to be a new CEO, how to deal with difficult employees. The feedback's been great because every chapter is only 4 or 5 pages, and it's, you know, thousands and thousands of pages of books and years of experience boiled down to just the stuff that works. And the folks that are in it, A, they're happy to be in it, but B, they look back and say, man, am I glad I took that advice because it really worked. Or I'm glad I got the other chapters because I needed some advice in the other areas.
What was your expectation when you wrote it, though, that somebody in a new leadership role could pick that up and just say, I'm going to pull out the one that feels like it applies to me now? Because that's what it feels like to me, is like, I'm thinking about sales right now. What do I need to read? And this is sort of a deep dive, but fast, in a few pages to say, here's how to think about this.
Exactly. Yeah, I thought it would be sort of a handbook for managers and presidents, owners of small to medium sized businesses, or all the way up to large companies, that if they ran into a problem, that they quickly look at and see if I had a chapter on it. If I had a chapter, it would be like having a top, you know, consultant thought leader standing next to you going, okay, you got a problem with having to do a disciplinary discussion with somebody who's not meeting the needs and they're not delivering results. Here's a tool you can use real quick to make that happen. So, and that's the way people have read through it, but then they also just go back and grab a chapter. Or if one of their managers is struggling, they say, just read chapter 6, you know, whatever it might be.
And it's interesting about the approach that you've taken is sending this letter with a memo, because I think the discipline of reading as much as you have and writing and doing these things and then coaching people is that you get a sense of how to help them. You get a sense of what to give them. And then it ends up showing up in this letter, which now shows up in a book. And it's a higher value than going out and having to study all these things. You don't have time as a leader. You can't go out and read all the books that you've read and then decide, well, this is what I've discovered. But you could distill it for them in the 4 or 5 pages. It's almost like in my reading of what I've read of the book so far is more of a, it's almost just coaching in a book. I mean,
it's what it is. These are people that I've coached CEOs all over the world. And these are the notes I send to them when they're facing something very challenging in their business and they need some help and they need it right now and they don't need a 50-page overview and I can't assign 6 books for them to read. So I've got to say, and I've got to be brutally honest and straightforward and frank with them and say, here is my very best advice. You do what you want to do, but if I were in your place and I were running that company based on everything I've read, everything I know, and all the people I know, here's the very best advice I can deliver to you.
We'll get to being brutally honest at the end. That's my last question for you. I actually have that written down. But let's, When you think about that, that leader taking that book and reading that, they're getting a deep dive into the subject. So what, if I remember right, did I pay $4.99 for that book?
Yeah, it's less than a Starbucks coffee.
It's less than $5. So if you are a leader and you're listening to this podcast, just pick it up, because this is absolutely the ROI on this one chapter. You know, the ROI is an immeasurable magnitude here for you. Let's do with the next book, which is a book that you wrote on success, and it's directed more towards young people. And
go ahead.
I'm going to say young people. What, you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, it was originally devised for college students or high school students and things like that, and that's why I taught it a lot. But I've taught that at Microsoft, IBM, Apple, Qualcomm. I don't teach it to adults as much, because it's a very challenging book, and you've got to really want to change, and you've got to really want to improve, and you've got to have a strong desire. And for a lot of kids in college, they're struggling, and they're not as successful in college as they want to be, or they're graduating and they're not sure what to do to get ready to be successful in life and their career. They're a little bit more open to it. But when you get somebody who's 40, that, you know, it's a little bit more challenging. But I have taught it at many corporations with great success.
We get pretty rigid in our beliefs, don't we?
We do.
Yeah, that's the hardest part, is talking grownups into shedding their beliefs. But young people who are still willing to play with new ideas and take on new beliefs are a little bit easier to reach. So what you're hearing, if you're listening to this, is if you're over 40, John and I have just completely given up on you at this point. No, we haven't. We haven't given up on you. We hope we change your mind, which is why we do what we do. And the writing and the speaking is, we hope we can get you to change your beliefs. That's the key to all of it. Tell me, I think the biggest challenge with the idea of success, though, is the definition.
Right.
And I want to talk about that first. Sure. What does success mean, and what should it mean to, let's take both groups and let's deal with young people, high school, college, because they're getting all this stuff about what success means coming at them from culture and society and friends and family. And then at 40, you have a different view, and you have a different view now than you did at that age. Tell me about how do you define that now, and how should a young person define it, and maybe somebody who's got a couple gray hairs?
Well, or like you and I, no hair.
No gray hair either, though.
Yeah, that's true. No gray hair. Here's the idea in the book, and it's called Strategies for Success. Is really a workbook, and it's got 11 companion videos with me that'll guide you through it. And what I say in the book is, the only way that you'll ever be successful is to define success for yourself, not by, you know, in culture, and at least in the American culture, most people define success as an abundance of money, fame, and power. And I have no problems with those things. I mean, I've worked for several billionaires, traveled all over the world. I like that stuff. But to me, and I can tell you from personal experience, I have been around people that make, ready for this, $750,000 an hour, and they were some of the most miserable and unhappy and unsuccessful people I've ever met. So here's my definition of success. When your self-concept and your daily behaviors are match your core values. So in other words, you're living your values and your daily behaviors match up to the way you always want your life to be. And you get up in the morning and you say, I'm living an honest life, truthful life of integrity. I love what I do. I'm having fun. To me, if your self-concept and core values are in harmony with your daily actions and behaviors, you are a very successful person. You might be rich, famous, and powerful. You might have none of that stuff, but to me, if you get up and you get to be yourself and live a life that makes you excited and passionate and joyful, that's success. But the workbook challenges everybody to write their own definition of success. And you're exactly right. Your definition of success when you're 25 is likely to be fairly different than the one when you're 45 or 55 or 65. So I tell them that you need to come back and take this workbook every couple of years and do it. And the whole major thing for me is, it's got to be values-based. You're not going to feel successful unless you're truly living in accordance with your personal core values, whatever those might be.
I think of Maslow's hierarchy, you know, and starting when you're young, significance and things like that matter a lot. It really matters that you're recognized for being an individual and all those. But as you get older, growth starts to matter more. And then really, ultimately, it seems to me that as we age, contribution starts to matter a lot more. And we start to measure ourselves by how we've been able to help other people, the impact we've been able to make, taking care of people, relationships, and it starts to morph. But when you're young, you're looking for the things that you started with, money, recognition, all of those things. And there's nothing wrong with them. They're a good way to keep score at some level, but they're not the whole thing. And I think the Harvard study that's gotten a lot of press lately has been that the math is about, you can't be any more happy than $80,000 a year. And yeah. At about 80, you get about as happy as you're going to get on that scale. But you talk about the other side of the scale. And I tell young people, I like working. I do. I love working. I get up in the morning very excited to work. But for some people, they don't feel the same way about the hustle that you or I might feel about the hustle. And they think, well, I have to do this to be happy. But you don't. I mean, you can get to the point that you're happy because you've got the house, the picket fence, the two kids, you're happily married, you've got your weekends free, and you're not, you know, hustling all the time. If that's happy for you, that's happy for you. You can't measure it against what you see society telling that you have to do. And like you said, there are a lot of people with a lot of money who are absolutely miserable running the race all the time, measuring themselves against other people who might have more money, in constant fear of having their money taken away from them or losing it at some level. They're petrified every minute of the day, and they're not really happy.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting you say that. I had a unique experience happen to me in 1992, which was I lived in Miami, Florida, when Hurricane Andrew went through. And I was out of the country working, and I got back just the day before the hurricane was going to hit. Didn't have a chance to button up my house or anything. I grabbed some water from my office, my truck, a little bit of food, a little bit of clothes, and went inland. And my house got totally destroyed, just wiped out, gone. Everything I own in the world, gone. Art, wine collection, my TV, my boat, everything, all the stuff I'd accumulated, taken away in one day. And it was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me because I realized it was just stuff. Matter of fact, I didn't buy a TV for 10 years after that. I said, you know, I haven't had a TV for the last 4 months while I've been living in the back of my truck in an abandoned apartment because that's all I could find. And it was awesome. I said, I spent more time reading, writing letters to my friends, journaling, all the stuff that was great for me. And, you know, you fast forward now, it's been 20 something years. I still only watch maybe an hour of TV a week or a month. Not that I think TV is horrible or bad. It's just, I would rather invest my time in reading a book, being with my wife, being with my friends, doing something healthy. And I choose that I value that stuff more than, you know, sitting in front of TV and watching a sitcom or something.
I got 1 hour a week, Game of Thrones. We've got 4 minutes left. So I want to ask one more question before you leave. And I'm taking this out of Strategies for Success, and it's being brutally honest with yourself. How do you help people become, and I think probably the greatest lies that we ever tell are the lies that we tell ourselves. And how do you help people become brutally honest? What do you get out of really being honest with yourself?
What do you get out of really being honest with you? You get a fulfilled life is what you get. You get to live a true life of integrity and honesty and not hiding behind a mask or pretending to be something you're not. And one of the ways I do it, it's the way I do it through the workbook is, and I've set that book up in a sort of a special way, is I have all these workshops and then I have people go back and score them. So I ask you, what are your 5 core values? And people have no problem writing those out. And then later in the workbook, I go, now go back and score yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 of how well you actually live those every day. You know, and I have another workshop, what's the image of your life 3 years from now? And then later in the workbook, go back and score that on a scale of 1 to 10 of how well are you actually moving in that direction? That's when people start to cry in the class because they look at, you know, I had a woman in her mid-50s in Atlanta who had written God and family as her top 2 values. And then when I asked her how she spent her time, she goes, I haven't been to church in 5 years and I see my kids about 15 minutes a night. I'm completely against my own values. No wonder I'm so unhappy. And that's how I help people be brutally honest. If they'll score themselves honestly, it'll stare them back in the face. And then they have to be courageous enough to make the decision, whether they're 24 or 44, to do the hard work to change for themselves, not for anybody else, but to get back in congruency with the things that they believe are most important to themselves.
You could do that exercise every year and just re-identify that gap and just nudge yourself back that direction and do really good work. Another excellent book for the staggeringly high price of $4.99. you're ripping people off with your confiscatory pricing strategy. $4.99, it's great. John, thanks for being here. I love the work that you do. I'm really happy I call you friend, and I wanted to bring you into this community and share what you do. I'll point people to Awesomely Simple as well as the two books on Kindle, which is the easiest offer we can ever make anybody. Where do people go to find out more about you?
Again, very complex. John@johnspence.com is my email, and it's just johnspence.com.
And on Twitter, @AwesomelySimple.
@AwesomelySimple. And in my, on my blog and on my website, I have a ton of free resources, a free YouTube channel with about 20 training videos there, all free. And all of the slides and all of the workshops I've done in the last 10 years are available for free through my website, through SlideShare.
Awesome. Thanks for being here.
It's my honor. It's my pleasure. Thank you, Anthony.
It's always a great time hanging out with John, and you should do just that by going to johnspence.com and go to Amazon and buy Letters to a CEO and Strategies for Success on Kindle. I'm Anthony Iannarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. When you go there, do sign up for the Sunday newsletter, the best content I produce every week, bar none. That's it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next week in the arena.